Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program number 433, Fifth Column, Part 2. This is being recorded on November 3rd of 2003. Alrighty, we're going to return now to a discussion of the Fifth Column, an underground Reich Fifth Column within the United States, part of an underground Reich, a virtual state around the world, present obviously to a certain extent within the U.S. intelligence community and the military, an extension of the Third Reich. It has as its anchor point, in my considered opinion, one that I've been voicing for many, many years, even before George W. got elected. That anchor point is nothing less than the Bush administration and the GOP. And we're going to continue looking at some strange bedfellows in For the Record Program number 413, For the Record Program 417, and For the Record Program number 423, we took a look at a number of evidentiary tributaries that linked not only some of the financial repositories for Saddam Hussein, but also the funding conduits for the Muslim Brotherhood, including Al-Qaeda and Hamas. And we followed some of these financial trains through some of these financial conduits through Switzerland, Lugano, Switzerland. We've taken a look at the many, many links that connect elements of the underground Reich with seemingly diametrically opposed religious, ideological, and ethnic elements. This is an international milieu that links elements of Saddam Hussein's regime with some of the most important international financial conduits in the world. The tax havens of Switzerland, the Channel Islands, Panama, the Cayman Islands, and so forth are the link that joins many of the most powerful corporations in the world with some of the world's most notorious terrorist institutions, the underground Reich, drug traffickers, and all manner of criminals. And it is some of these financial conduits completely above the normal political world that constitute one of the cementing links in what ultimately, I think, if it is not interdicted, was something that will prove to be an altogether deadly, fatal mix for the human race and for democracy. And it is this milieu, these international financial conduits that provide the cement that links some of these strange bedfellows. I haven't got time to even begin to do an adequate recap. Please check the web. Go to FTR391 and the other descriptions. And if what I'm talking about seems far-fetched, check out the information. Hundreds of pages about it, and I think that'll satisfy your curiosity and allay skepticism if you're willing to give it a chance. This administration is indeed given to strange bedfellows. We're going to continue with an article that we concluded Side 2 with. This is an article by Laura Rosen from The Nation magazine of November 10th of 2003. It's called Strange Bedfellows, the AIQ Albunia Bechtel links, and we're talking about the link between MIGA, Sadun Albunia, and Bechtel Corporation, and Al-Taqwa. I'm going to overlap this slightly, or Al-Qaeda, I should say, and Al-Taqwa. I'm going to overlap this slightly with the material from Side 1. Sadun Albunia is one of three principals in one of Iraq's oldest companies, the Albunia Trading Company. The Iraqi firm has become a major subcontractor for U.S. firms working under U.S. government contracts in Iraq. But as documents obtained by The Nation from the Lugano office of the Swiss Federal Commercial Registry show, Sadun Albunia is also a founding member of a Swiss-registered firm called the Malaysian Swiss Gulf and African Chamber, or MIGA, which the U.S. government and the United Nations Security Council have designated as funders of Al-Qaeda. MIGA is one of 14 businesses controlled by Ahmed Idris Nasruddin and Youssef M. Nada. Then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill said in an August 29, 2002 news release that businesses in the Nasruddin-Nada network, quote, appeared to be providing a clandestine line of credit to a close associate of Osama bin Laden, and as of late September of 2001, Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda organization received financial assistance from Youssef M. Nada, unquote. Attempts to reach the Albunia Trading Company in Baghdad were unsuccessful. Asked about the Albunia Al-Qaeda connection, Treasury spokesman Taylor Griffin said the law is unambiguous. Quote, the basic story is this, MIGA was designated. Albunia was not, said Griffin. By designated, Griffin was referring to the list of specially designated global terrorists compiled by Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control. American individuals and firms are prohibited from doing business with any person or organization on the list. Quote, certainly Albunia's association with MIGA should raise some due diligence concerns, Griffin said. But it's not necessarily wrong for a U.S. company to do business with him, and it is certainly not illegal, unquote. Agreeing with that assessment is Bechtel, which signed up the Albunia Trading Company as its first Iraqi subcontractor to work on the construction of Iraq's Almat Bridge. Quote, Albunia was vetted through the U.S.-led Coalition Provisional Authority, unquote, Bechtel spokesman Howard Menaker said in an email. Again quoting, during the background investigation, there was nothing found that indicated we could not work with Albunia. Further, there were additional informal discussions with other individuals and advisors to us, but again, nothing indicated wrongdoing, nor that we would be precluded from doing business with Bunia, unquote. Another firm with close ties to the White House that's angling to help clients win Iraq contracts, GOP lobbyist Haley Barbour's New Bridge Strategies, proudly announces on its website that its local partner in a consortium bidding on a contract is led by, is, quote, led by the Albunia family, who are a leading commercial group in Iraq with over 80 years' experience in Iraq, unquote. So again, New Bridge Strategies, GOP lobbyist doing business in Iraq through the Albunia Company in turn, overlapped with these Byzantine and yet absolutely pivotal supranational and supralegal financial networks that not only embraced the funding of the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, etc., but which also embraced the Underground Reich and its point element in the United States, the Bush administration, and its related elements, including this deadly Islamo-fascist fifth column. In For the Record programs 396 and subsequent broadcasts, I talked about what I believe to be going on, and I believe that the United States was lured into a trap in Iraq, very much like luring a force with a diversionary movement and then closing in. And I believe that the nature of the assault on the United States is diplomatic and political. Certainly the effed-up intelligence handling and diplomatic handling of the run-up to the war in Iraq has absolutely discredited the U.S. abroad. On top of that, it is very obvious that the administration completely disregarded the projections of the military, in particular, former Army Chief of Staff Eric Shinseki, who warned that many, many more troops would be needed. It should be noted that many projections were that far more money would be needed, and also many counterterrorism experts warned that this would be exactly what Al-Qaeda would want, that this would generate rage against the U.S. and the Muslim world, and far from being an effective device against Al-Qaeda, would serve as a marvelous recruiting tool. I would add, and this is entirely my opinion, that I believe that the nature of the attack on the United States, which is diplomatic, political, and economic, because this ain't doing this country any good from an economic standpoint, also involves an altogether cynical use of the military. I would note that people like Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, AWOL George Bush of the Texas Air National Guard, or formerly before he was suspended from flying because he refused to take a drug test and was assigned to a disciplinary unit from which he went AWOL. None of these people has their kids in the military. None of the people who've sent us to war in Iraq served in the military. And I believe that fine men and women in uniform are being used in an utterly cynical fashion. And I think that in addition to the obvious joy that Al-Qaeda-linked elements are taking at the loss of life among American service personnel in Iraq, I would just bet that given the eugenic and fascist underground Reich authorship of what is taking place, that the people in the corridors of power in the underground Reich are perfectly happy to see the herd being thinned, as a fascist eugenicist might put it. I think they're quite happy to see people who are not their relatives going down in Iraq. I've no doubt that there are many elements within the Bush administration that do not like the diplomatic and political egg on their faces, but I think the real key string pullers are absolutely out to destroy the United States, and I mean destroy it. And I believe that our situation is like that of France in the run-up to World War II, and I believe that along with the obvious joy that Al-Qaeda-linked and Ba'ath Party-linked elements will be feeling at the loss of life among American service personnel in Iraq, I think the joy is being felt in the corridors of power that overlap the Bush White House and the underground Reich. I also think that that joy is being shared by some elements of the virtual state, as former University of Texas professor Philip Bobbitt put it, within what has passed for the so-called progressive community. Indeed, in a number of broadcasts, I've noted that there are a number of manifestations of fascism that unite ostensibly left elements with third world elements and fascist elements in what is a basically fascist milieu. Yaqui-ite fascism, third position fascism, what has become known in the former Soviet Union as a red-brown alliance. All of these are elements in which far right, far left, and elements of third world populations are united in a fascist political agenda whose primary pivot points are anti-Semitism, masquerading, of course, as, quote, anti-Zionism, unquote, and above all, anti-Americanism. One of the outgrowths of this type of political phenomenon, something that is sadly occupied center stage in discussions vis-a-vis the peace movement in Iraq, is the International Answer Organization. That, too, is an organization which some of the elements of the virtual state that is the underground Reich can be found. Returning again to the conservative website of Daniel Pipes, September 23rd, 2003, update. Speaking again of Kamal Nawash, running for the Virginia State Assembly on the Republican ticket, being supported by Grover Norquist, about whom we heard earlier, and an individual who served as the attorney, whose law firm has served as the attorney for Abdurrahman Alamoudi. Daniel Pipes notes on September 23rd of 2003, according to a web posting, Nawash spoke at a Muslim Solidarity Day for Justice and Peace rally near the White House on May 24th, 2003, promoted by International Answer. And that is the case from the web itself. There is a communique from some of the spokespersons for International Answer. Their rally was called Say No to Bush and Ashcroft's Attack on Muslims, Immigrants, Civil Rights, Affirmative Action, and Workers' Rights. In addition to Mr. Nawash, one of the speakers there, and this is worth noting in connection with, for the record, 430, the first refuge of a scoundrel, and in particular, the admittedly complex but nonetheless pivotally important concept that I discussed in For the Record programs 396 and subsequent broadcasts, that of the virtual state, a political state without geographical borders. And beyond that, one that embraces and to a certain extent unites seemingly opposite, absolute opposite political, ethnic, national, and religious philosophies. And noting the list of guests at this particular rally, in addition to Kamal Nawash, associate of Grover Norquist and the Republican candidate for the Virginia Assembly, again, this is from a web posting by Answer, Imam Siraj Wahaj. Siraj Wahaj is a prominent African-American imam and someone whose radicalization and, as a very thoughtful article from the Wall Street Journal puts it, his spiritual journey through black nationalism to militant basically militant Islam, has placed Wahaj within the American Wahhabi-linked milieu. This is an article called One Imam Traces the Path of Islam in Black America. It's by Paul M. Barrett from the Wall Street Journal of October 24th of 2003. The article begins on the front page, and this long and very thoughtful article skips down and notes some of the tragic outgrowths of the journey of Imam Wahhaj, again a speaker at this May 24th rally. Imam Wahhaj's worlds collided when the World Trade Center was bombed in 1993. The FBI investigation of the bombing led to charges not only against the bombers, but also a network of anti-American Muslims who planned to destroy the United Nations headquarters, the George Washington Bridge, Lincoln Tunnel, and other New York area landmarks. The FBI soon figured out that two members of that network had worshipped at Imam Wahhaj's Masjid al-Taqwa, Sheikh Abdel Rahman and Mr. Hampton L. In a February 2, 1995 letter to defense lawyers in the Landmarks bombing case, then U.S. Attorney Mary Jo White named about 170 people as, quote, unindicted persons who may be alleged as co-conspirators, unquote. Imam Wahhaj was on the list but was never charged. Ms. White declined to comment. I would note that the attorney, by the way, for Sheikh Rahman was none other than International Answer pivot man Ramsey Clark, who ironically enough was the former attorney general who announced bright and early on the morning of April 5th, 1968, that there was no conspiracy behind the assassination of Martin Luther King. In point of fact, there quite obviously was. Ramsey Clark, who also helped to subvert Jim Garrison's investigation into the assassination of JFK, which to a large extent was vindicated by the House Select Committee on Assassinations investigation in the late 70s, and who also insisted bright and early on the morning after Senator Robert Kennedy was shot, fatally wounded, that there was no conspiracy behind Robert Kennedy's assassination either. Ramsey Clark proving devastatingly and strategically, in my opinion, wrong in all of those cases. It's ironic that the milieu that embraces Imam Wahhaj and elements of International Answer and Ramsey Clark also embraces Sheikh Rahman, and which ultimately one of the tributaries stemming from that goes in the direction of the assassination of Martin Luther King. As stated, one of the things that I believe to be going on is that there is literally, not only is the September 11th attack and related events an extension of World War II, but I believe that just as World War II in France was at the same time a hostile attack by a foreign power, it also constituted a civil war, quite literally a civil war within France, between sincerely patriotic elements within France, stemming from conservatives, to elements of the left under the Social Front of Léon Blum, and their opposite numbers, fascist-linked elements within the monarchist and corporatist factions of France, whose alliance and allegiance was to fascism and beyond that to Nazi Germany. They had strong structural economic connections to the Third Reich, as, by the way, does the Bush family historically, and as the Bush family does to the Wahhabi slash al-Taqwa link as well. Ultimately, the defeat of France in World War II on the battlefield, at least initially, was accomplished through the subversion of a fifth column and the struggle between that fifth column and sincerely loyal and patriotic elements within France constituted a civil war. And I believe that what is taking place within the United States at this time is just such a civil war. I believe that underground Reich elements linked to the Bush administration are literally attempting to intimidate or perhaps even destroy those elements within the intelligence community, military and CIA and elsewhere, FBI, customs, etc., that are sincerely attempting to operate on behalf of the United States. The Bush administration's vetting, or outing, I should say, of Valerie Plame, an alleged former clandestine CIA officer and the wife of former Ambassador to Niger Joseph Wilson, who basically was the source for the public negation of the spurious claim by the Bush administration that Saddam Hussein had been seeking enriched uranium from Niger. This was one of the excuses given for going to war in Iraq. It has now been discredited. There are serious indications, in fact, it was discredited early on, but there are serious indications that the outing of Wilson's wife is basically an attempt to intimidate those elements of the intelligence community who would go against this the Bush administration, and I believe in the background, the Underground Reich. And I can't stress strongly enough that I believe that what is taking place in the United States and the world today is literally an extension of World War II, with the Underground Reich as a virtual state attacking from without, subverting from within politically and economically. And I believe that the domestic American manifestation of this struggle is quite literally manifesting itself as a civil war within the U.S. military and intelligence community between sincerely democratic and patriotic elements and the subversive elements of the Bush administration and the Underground Reich with their Islamo-fascist allies abroad and at home in the leftist element of the fifth column. Financial Times, October 24th and October 26th of 2003. This is an article by Edward Alden in Washington. It's headlined, Naming of CIA Agent Aimed to Discredit the Service, unquote. It reads in part as follows. The Bush administration's exposure of a clandestine Central Intelligence Agency operative was part of a campaign aimed at discrediting U.S. intelligence agencies for their failure to support White House claims that Saddam Hussein was reconstituting Iraq's nuclear weapons program, former agency officials said yesterday. In a rare hearing called by Senate Democratic leaders, the official said that the White House engaged in pressure and intimidation aimed at generating intelligence evidence to support the decision to make war on Iraq. Senior administration officials in July revealed the name of Valerie Plame, a former clandestine CIA officer, and the wife of Joseph Wilson, who was sent by the CIA in 2002 to assess claims that Iraq was attempting to purchase enriched uranium from Niger. Mr. Wilson had angered the White House by concluding that there was no evidence to support the claim and then going public with that information after the war. The Justice Department has launched a criminal investigation to determine the source of the leak, which in effect ended Ms. Plame's career as a CIA operative and may have endangered agency sources who came in contact with her. Vince Canestrero, former operations chief at the CIA, charged yesterday, quote, She was outed as a vindictive act because the agency was not providing support for policy statements that Saddam Hussein was reviving his nuclear program, unquote. The leak was a way to, quote, demonstrate an underlying contempt for the intelligence community, the CIA in particular, unquote. He said that in the run-up to the war with Iraq, the White House had engaged in unprecedented pressure on the CIA and other intelligence agencies to find evidence that Iraq had links to Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, and that Mr. Hussein's regime was trying to build a nuclear bomb. While the intelligence agencies believe their mission is to provide accurate analysis to the president to aid policy decisions, in the case of Iraq, quote, we had policies that were already adopted and they were looking for those selected pieces of intelligence that would support the policy, Mr. Canestrero said. In written testimony, he said that Vice President Dick Cheney and his top aide, Louis Libby, went to CIA headquarters to press mid-level analysts to provide support for the claim. Mr. Cheney, he said, quote, insisted the desk analysts were not looking hard enough for the evidence, unquote. Mr. Canestrero said his information came from current agency analysts. Other agency officials who said they had been colleagues of Ms. Plame when she was trained as a CIA agent said the leak could do severe damage to the morale of the intelligence agencies. Quote, the U.S. government has never before released the name of a clandestine officer, unquote, said Jim Marcinkowski, a former CIA case officer, again quoting, My classmates and I have been betrayed, unquote. Skipping down. The administration has refused to appoint an independent counsel on the leak investigation, and Federal Bureau of Investigation officials said this week that John Ashcroft, Attorney General and close political ally of President George W. Bush, was involved in the investigation. I would note that in the summer of 2001, Robert Mueller was appointed, a former George Bush the Elder Justice Department official, was appointed head of the FBI, and he had led a number of very badly attenuated alleged investigations into aspects of the intelligence community that, had they been exposed, would have not only led to the conviction of the elder George Bush in connection with Iran-Contra, but perhaps even more importantly, through the BCCI milieu, would have led directly to the Bush family, Bin Laden family, business connections. And I voiced my opinion in For the Record 310, recorded on July 8th of 2001, that this was basically, this appointment was to see to it that those investigations never properly bore fruit. We're going to touch on a couple of more aspects of the virtual state. As I mentioned in a recent broadcast abroad, this was in For the Record program number 425, there has been an investigation in Spain conducted by the heroic Baltasar Garzón, a crusading Spanish jurist, or I should say a fearless Spanish jurist, who has indicted not only Osama bin Laden, but other elements of al-Qaeda, and a journalist with Al Jazeera. And for those people who, and there are a fair number of these apologists in the United States who claim that, oh, the Arabs weren't involved and this is also, well, the Bush administration is inextricably linked with these. But Judge Garzón is the judge who indicted not only Augusto Pinochet in past investigations, but none other than Henry Kissinger. I think it'll be difficult for the Bush administration's de facto apologists on the left to classify Judge Garzón's indictment of Osama bin Laden and others as a tool of U.S. imperialism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. San Jose Mercury News, Sunday, November 2nd, 2003, article by Kevin Hall. Spain indicts Al Jazeera correspondent. This is about Taizir Aloni. Skipping down. Asked about the case, Garzón said the investigation of the alleged Syrian immigrant terrorist cell dates back coincidentally to September 11, 1995. Aloni, that's the Al Jazeera journalist, fled Syria in 1980 during an era when the Syrian army was killing students it believed belonged to the Muslim Brotherhood, a militant Islamic group trying to overthrow the secular government. And talking about the anti-Semitism expressed by outgoing Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir, Financial Times, Thursday, October 23rd of 2003, John Burton writes, "Departing Mahathir shuns diplomacy to the bitter end." Speaking of the influences upon him, one book prominent in Malaysian bookstores has on its cover a Star of David superimposed on the Statue of Liberty. It is The International Jew, an anti-Semitic tract commissioned in the 1920s by Henry Ford, also parenthetically one of the primary influences on Adolf Hitler. Henry Ford, along with Fritz Thyssen and George Herbert Walker, W.'s great-grandfather, the three earliest prominent financial backers of Adolf Hitler. A ray of hope in the current campaign. New York Times, October 29th of 2003, Catherine Q. Seeley, writing from Durham, New Hampshire, speaking of Wesley Clark, man I'd like to see become president. Clark lays responsibility for 9/11 at Bush's feet. In a blistering review of President Bush's national security policy, General Wesley K. Clark said on Tuesday that the administration could not, quote, walk away from its responsibilities for 9/11, unquote. You can't blame something like this on lower-level intelligence officers, however badly they communicated in memos with each other, said the retired general, the latest entrant in the Democratic presidential field, skipping down. And he added, "We've got to say again and again and again until the American people understand, strong rhetoric in the aftermath is no substitute for wise leadership," unquote. Amen. Perhaps a counterattacking element within this civil and global war. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 433, Fifth Column Part 2, being recorded on November 3rd of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.